I do have a question.
Yes, go ahead.
We've, I think, had some conversations before about a sutta in which the Buddha talks about different ways of dealing with, is it negative mind states or maybe it's negative thoughts? I personally tend to attach to negative and gloomy thoughts. I'm interested to know, when might one decide simply to be with a thought or a feeling, and when try to change that? So just for example, when you're doing metta meditation, obviously you are manipulating your thoughts and feelings. You're consciously trying to change them. So you're not simply understanding, as the Buddha's translated as saying in the Four Noble Truths. You're not simply examining that thought. You're that thought or feeling that you have. You're trying to change it, to make it go somewhere. And I'm interested to know when to do one and when to do the other.
I don't have a kind of a theoretical strategy that I apply, and I haven't written a manual about it for myself, which I consult about how to do it, because I feel it's more like an intuitive felt relationship than just a sought through a rational one. And I feel the two also belong together. They're not necessarily mutually exclusive. I mean, often the rational mind can think that way, isn't it? You say, oh, there's this one way. Oh, I should just allow the thought to be a thought, or I should change it. And then so one must be right, one must be wrong. But I would also always invite to see, I mean, that's part of the meditative contemplative practice, isn't it? To see, well, how does it actually work for you in your life? I think you naturally, hopefully, do a bit of both. So if you say like the sutta that we talked about, I think it's Majjhima Nikaya 21, just for those who are interested. It's five ways of dealing with unhelpful thoughts or something like that. And they could all look like methods to do something about your thoughts when you recognize them. One is just to contemplate the disadvantage of whatever thought, or so you just reflect on it, you contemplate it, you know, about how about the disadvantages of indulging in that. And the Buddha usually gives a simile with that. And I think with that one is where he gives a simile about, like, you imagine yourself like wearing kind of a rotten corpse of an animal around your neck. It's just very visual, direct way of imagining, like, the ugliness of, say, angry or resentful thoughts, you know, like imagine them like a rotten corpse around your neck. It doesn't look good, no? And then there are what are the other ones? One is like the replacement thing. That's a typical one, like the way often the Buddha speaks about metta. When you're angry, then that should be the notification bell for, say, the time to do my metta practice, to counteract, you know, so you replace unwholesome thought with a wholesome thought. But then there's also one which is about just slowing down the thought. So that is more closer to just being with the thought, isn't it? It's like you don't feed it, but you just allow the whole kind of process to settle. I mean, in order to do that, it's something we need to figure out, find out ourselves, well, how does it actually work? But I think it's usually if you manage to just not actually, not attached to the thought, which basically means not to feed it. No, almost any kind of, well, negative thoughts, for them to keep going. I mean, it's something that we are doing. We have to reinvest in them. So that's three. Well, so the last one is just to grit your teeth and push it down. And that's more like, it seems more like an emergency measure, isn't it? Like if you're just about to, you know, to whack somebody because you're really annoyed about what they're saying, and you just hold it down, you know, until you have a more spacious moment where you can actually contemplate that, isn't it? And what's the fifth one that I forgot? So we've got contemplating the disadvantage, replacing it, slowing down. The other one is just to distract yourself, basically. You put your mind on something else, which is interesting. It's like what's often recommended, like with small children or with pet animals like dogs, isn't it? Who don't have a, you know, they have a short attention span. So if you just distract them for a while, then they might forget actually the unwholesome or unhelpful kind of interest that they had before, you know, just distract them, then they go on to something else. And sometimes that also works with our mind, isn't it? Sometimes, so that would be an example for skillful distraction, so to speak. and that can actually work as well. So in some ways, it's all ways of dealing with thought. But so how does it combine with just the idea of just being with your thought and knowing it to be a thought and just have space for it and not it? I think for of those five versions, that one about just slowing down, I think it's probably quite close to that. We could take it as a placeholder for that. I don't know whether that's precisely what the Buddha meant, but I think it's close enough. That is like the very basic, the fundamental attitude in which we first approach the object of contention, what bothers us, in this case, the unhelpful thought. So one way of saying it is where the practice starts, it's also where it ends, where it all comes together. You know, the other bits of doing something about it are kind of in between. So what do I mean by that? First of all, there's just this capacity to just allow something to be, that is to accept it into our consciousness. It's already there anyway, isn't it? So it's like to cut out the reflex of aversion against what we don't like, you know, not just about somebody else, but about ourselves. You know, we might have, first of all, an aversive reaction to what our husband says or our daughter or our friend or our boss. And then this reaction comes up, which then, as a good Buddhist, we recognize as unwholesome and not really helpful. And then we have an aversive reaction to our aversive reaction, right? And that tends to, of course, complicate things. So then we are just reacting. And so we don't actually have a firm ground for our practice. We don't, so to speak, don't have our feet on the ground. We get swept away by the momentum. And it becomes difficult then actually you start to deal with it. It's like, you know, this idea about fighting a sword with another sword, you know, you're just creating more agitation. You somehow have to catch that movement of the mind, the reactive movement of the mind. And first of all, just open up and see what is actually there. You know, that is going back to First Noble Truth, you know, that we often just try to remember. It's just very important. First Noble Truth, there is dukkha. There is an unwholesome thought, an unwholesome emotion. Now, what needs to be done? What is the practice advice with the First Noble Truth? Dukkha has to be understood. No, and in this case, if you're suffering about our aversive reaction, that needs to be understood. In order to understand it, we have to stand under it. You know, that is, we have to feel it. We have to feel how it feels. We have to look at how it looks like. That is a part of just allowing it to be, right? Receiving it. This is just the first step of just opening up, as it were, the stage on which you can then actually practice in whatever way with what you're actually experiencing. And probably it's a good side remark. This is saying, like, unwholesome thoughts, they are, of course, not just abstract thoughts. That would be kind of an idle pursuit, isn't it? It's usually there an expression of a negative emotion, isn't it? So there's an emotional state there. So that's, for starters, is also already the first look, the first view, the first attitude of opening up to practice is to look what's there. Okay, I'm stuck, or I'm experiencing an emotion which I qualify, possibly for good reasons. I might, of course, also be mistaken, but let's say for good reasons, we're saying I have good reason to believe this is actually not very helpful, like resentment or something like that. Okay, so practice advice is, first of all, to always see and look at and ask yourself, but what is that actually in my experience right now? Rather than having an idea about it, no, of what I'm experiencing, and then even an idea about what I should be doing about it or shouldn't be doing about it and so forth, then I'm in my head. So that's the first step. Just accepting, just being with it, just means I'm allowing myself to just experience that. No, so what is it? So resentment is a sort of emotional state, and it has always those two elements. You know, what are those two elements? Same for every emotion. Anybody? I mean, it's your experience. You should know. unless I'm wrong. Right? Okay. If nobody wants to venture, well, it's there's a mental activity, there's a thought, and there's a feeling. No? And every emotion has those, in our actual experience, the direct experience, has those two elements: physical feeling in the body and some story that we're telling ourselves, which presumably we believe, otherwise it wouldn't have any power. No, if I'm just thinking like for fun or whatever, it's just random background noise, you know, I'm going to kill this guy, blah, 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 blah. It probably doesn't have any traction if I don't believe it, but there's something that I'm believing. He has done this to me. He shouldn't be doing this. And he's always doing this. And it shouldn't be this way. It's a story that I'm telling myself. And I believe it. Proof is that I'm actually feeling all agitated. My feeling all agitated seems to prove that my thought is right. And so I keep thinking my thought. My keeping thinking the thought keeps actually the feeling, the activation in the body going. Well, that's how we keep nourishing our emotions. You know, the feeling part and the stories that we tell ourselves, they feed each other basically. No, particularly if you don't have actually a clear view. So being able to just step back and first of all, just noticing, oh, this is happening. Oh, yeah, there's a story that I'm telling myself. And it's about this righteousness, whatever. And then I have a chance because in that moment, I have created some space. I just notice what is there. It's this story. Then I can try and can see, well, how about, you know, if I park this for a moment, I already know this. Yes, yes, he has done this. He's always been doing that. He shouldn't be doing this. I've told myself the story already 50 times this time around and, you know, countless times before. I know it, so I don't have to repeat it. I know it, so I can just park it. And then I can actually take care and attend to the feeling part of it. How does this actually feel in the body? No? So that is a part of just opening up to what's there in terms of just being with what is. Now, if I do that, I mean, what happens? I mean, I don't know in your case, but if I really manage to do that, actually somehow, usually things already change by themselves, don't they? I mean, sometimes maybe that just allows the whole thing to dissolve and turn into something completely different. That could be anything. Next moment when I just see that I might be laughing about myself, it's already a totally different emotion, right? or it could be something else, no? Or maybe it just keeps going. I then maintain a certain kind of perspective, no? Like in our meditation, you know, notice the space in which all this is happening, physical sensations and mental formations, thoughts, images, maybe some sounds and a few other things. No, but particularly this physical sensation, in this case, the important thing, physical sensations and thoughts. And I can look at that. If I can maintain that, no, I have a perspective. And in some way or another, you know, if you have contemplated about, you know, unwholesome emotions or thoughts, if you've read the sutta that you mentioned, or if you have even just the simple notion that this is not useful, it's not helpful, then it's probably natural that then in some way or another, our mind is going to come up with something else. No, it might go into the mode of contemplating the disadvantage of this. It's just natural. I don't have to say, oh, you know, I shouldn't just let it be this. I must contemplate it. It's just something that naturally comes to mind, isn't it? Or if you've done a lot of metta meditation, then this is exactly, I mean, this is what's supposed to be for. Then you see, ah, yeah, okay, well, this is the time. So maybe I practice some metta. No. Or I just let it calm down. I just say, okay, I just stay. You know, this is why I've said this is very similar to just being with it. I just stay with this space. I notice those thoughts. I notice those feelings and see what happens if I do not feed them. Most likely is that they're going to slow down. No guarantee, but it might happen. So it's just one, you know, of the things that we can, of course, do. Often it just happens. A fire that you don't feed is eventually going to burn out. But logical. If it's contained, if it's not contained, then it might go spread, you know, everywhere. So, you know, that's why we need the container, you know, that's awareness, that's meditation, that's our sila, that's our determination of not to act on it, neither mentally nor physically, nor through speech. So mentally also means we try not to actively feed the unwholesome thought, no? Or maybe even distraction. I said, all right, yes, here we go again. I already know this one and I'm rather bored with it. You know, why don't I just, you know, just drop it for a while and watch the news? These are skillful means. So they are the in-between bit of the practice. You know, the beginning is the just being aware of what's happening because without that, we are just going to react. No, that allows us to have this first perspective. Sometimes that's enough. Sometimes then naturally to mind come some skillful ways about how to deal with the agitation inside. And it's not just the thought, of course. It's the feeling, and it's what's behind it, what you know triggered it. No, whether we investigate deeper or do something about it. And then behind there is, you know, how we know ourselves, how we know what actually works for us, you know, what metta meditation means to you, because we're all different. You know, some people might have a natural inclination to do the metta meditation. Maybe that's not what works for you. Maybe you're more reflective if it works for you to really think things through. And sometimes, like I say, just distracting yourself, of course, might, it's, at first hand, is not necessarily a skillful mean that might go particularly deep, because you just give yourself a break, but then the next time, you know, you haven't actually dealt with it, so it might catch up with you again. But, you know, sometimes it can still be skillful if you just know. I mean, you have, it's a pattern that you know for a lifetime, and you just want to give yourself a break, because it's just, you're pulling the plug. You take the energy out of it, you know? And you distract yourself a bit until you calm down again. And then, you know, you can actually reflect on it at another time. Like, for example, once you're in a better mood again. I mean, it can be just very skillful. And that's like how practice, you know, works, how we you know, use those different skillful means to move us into the right kind of places where we can let go. Or letting go, of course, actually means just letting be, you know, just allowing things to be. That's why I'm saying where this, the just being with the thought, just knowing it as a thought, is also the end of practice. It's when it comes to the place that you don't actually have to do anything about it anymore. Right, because you have got enough internal space that, yeah, you just see it, you detect it, and there you go, you let it go, and you stay with the space. Now, that's if you like, the most advanced. And for many of us, that is maybe something that we just experience sometimes, where it just works. You know, you catch yourself, you notice it, and you can let it go. And what happens if you really let it go? What's left? Well, you just, if you really let go, then there's just presence, isn't it? And that's just, there you are. No need to go anywhere else, no? And I imagine, like, if practice, you know, if you have practiced for maybe for a long time and you've sorted out a lot of internal kind of conflicts and turbulence, and the mind becomes more flexible and at ease and agile, then that might become actually just more really just like second nature, you know, that it's less and less that you actually even have to use any skillful means or do something about it. The mind just notices, you know, this one is good, pick it up, you know, follow it. This one works, just discard it, nonsense. But of course, for many, probably more or less all of us, we all have areas in our life where we can't just do it that way. You know, we just, oh yeah, okay, that one is not useful, just drop it. But it's just not, it's just going to keep kind of jumping at us and biting us. And then, you know, okay, that's where you need to know that, all right, I need some resources. That's where then the skillful means come in. But the basis for applying all those skillful means is still just whatever ability we have to just be present with what we are experiencing right now. And it's somewhat subtle. It's not that easy, because of course the tendency of the mind, even after a long time of practice, is always getting out of this. I mean, I recognize this is wrong. I don't want it, so I'm doing something wrong. Tell me the trick. How do I make this go away? If that's not really properly reflected, then that's just another reaction of, out of fear or aversion of some form of negativity again, you know, against our experience. And so we stay in that loop, which is the wheel of suffering. So the way out is always the way through. It's just opening up to what is. No, it's not that it should be different. That's just the mind. It's whatever you're experiencing right now is there for a reason, for the end. So, you know, to really become more free, we're going to have to go deeper into the understanding of whatever it is on whatever level, know the reasons behind it, the conditions that make us react like that. And for that, first, that's what we need presence for. That's what mindfulness is for, to develop the ability to just really stay with our experience, whether it's pleasant, unpleasant, whatever, so that then we can actually look at it. You know, then we can work with it, we can investigate it, and also we can just hold it as it is and not feed it. You know, so remember that also Ajahn Chah was there to say that the most important practice is patient endurance. Because yeah, often it is the case that on some level, intellectually, we do understand that we're doing something that's not good, not helpful, but we can't just let go. You know, we just don't have the internal strengths, the resources that we need, the deep enough understanding or whatever on the level that, that is important. So then, of course, we don't just give in and just and thus then just indulge. That wouldn't be the way of a practitioner, isn't it? Saying, oh, well, whatever, no, that's the way God made me. So take me or leave me. I'm just terrible. So that's just my fate. But if we can't do anything, at least the last thing that we still can try to do is just bear with it, suffer responsibly, you know, as some people would say, consciously. This last method that the Buddha said of just gritting your teeth, it doesn't always have to be gritting your teeth, isn't it? As you say, yeah, this burns, you know, I really want to hit this guy or whatever it is, you know, but I just hold back and I just, if I can't do anything else, I just accept the suffering. True for us all, true for me as well, you know, sometimes I'm stupid, so I have to suffer the consequences. It's better than acting it out and making it worse. Sometimes we can't even do that, then we just accept the consequences of whatever we do, you know, and pick ourselves up again. So, does that make sense? Or maybe there's further comments on that or questions?
Yes, it does make sense. And I think what I take from that is needing probably to be more flexible and not to think there's one answer, there's one way of responding. And probably what you were saying about feeling and thought, which I do remember came up in a previous. Yes, I think what I'm probably looking at quite often is kind of like waking up in the morning with a negative feeling and the mind jumps in and says, why are you feeling like this? You know, there's nothing to be feeling negative about. So then it proliferates. Yeah, it proliferates from one, you know, a negative feeling and then feeling negative about that negative feeling.
It's interesting how that's the nature of the mind to proliferate, isn't it? And then we can really get entangled in something, get stuck with it. So like, you know, I often wake up with a negative or weird feeling. And sometimes, maybe it's just interesting. I mean, first of all, and that's again, it's like same practice, isn't it? First of all, you don't want to just run away from it because then you can never learn about it. So yes, you're willing to accept to feel it and notice that. Oh, so that's interesting. And then at some point you might, when it feels right, just to investigate it. I wouldn't suggest that thinking about it is naturally the best way of exploring those things. But of course there are ways. No, ultimately just meaning to get in some, accepting that as part of yourself that you're interested in and that you want to explore. But then sometimes I also know by now that, you know, I might wake up with a weird feeling, but as soon as I get up and get going, it's gone. So then most of the time, well, you know, I don't need to just always indulge and explore my important negative feelings every morning and then miss puja or whatever, you know, then just get up and get going, you know, and then I'm fine. Right. So this is what I mean. It's like we also have to know maybe or no, who knows? I mean, but we have to be flexible in using different kind of means according to the moment of what feels appropriate is useful for us right now. No, we don't always have to compulsively investigate everything that we're experiencing right now. Sometimes I say, well, now it's not the moment. So, you know, I do something more practical, whatever. And maybe I get back to it later when there's the right moment. And another addition, which is probably important, is to remember that, like, when we talk about metta, so the Buddha, of course, in the suttas often just particularly speaks about metta as a tool to use when we feel anger at somebody, so directed at somebody else. But we often forget that the most important one is for metta is ourselves. We have to start with ourselves. You know, remember, if you are stuck in negative emotions in one way or another, then you are suffering. So you need to start to be by this kindness towards yourself. And that's another mistake I think we often do. We think, like, as good Buddhists, well, I'm annoyed about a person, I'm angry, and I say, oh, that's wrong. I should actually be nice to them. And then, oh, yes, please, this is the moment to try to practice metta to them. But all we want to do is to kick them. And then we feel even worse. And we think, well, you know, I'm useless. You know, I can't practice metta. You know, I'm getting even more angry and full of hatred. But I think part of the problem is that we've missed actually that first step, that we realize, hey, I am hurting, no, for whatever reason, you know, maybe because somebody did do something mean to me, or maybe it's just something to do with my condition. It might be totally unnecessary, but something that I've done to myself, you know, we're hurting ourselves a lot too, some more than others. But then that's a difficult thing also, I guess, to learn. But we first have to also learn to pray, have some kindness for ourselves, you know, because that allows us to deal with our negative feeling. And then actually kindness towards others is actually much more easy, much more natural. And this first step of kindness, again, is being willing to feel what you're feeling, so that you get off that self-replicating or feeding negative train, rather than being a worse about being a worse, feeling bad about being a worse or being a worse, and, you know, just in the spiral of negativity. This ability to step out of it and just allow yourself to feel what you're feeling. Oh, wow, I just feel rotten today. If you really allow yourself to feel that, what is happening? There's this, oh, I really feel rotten, but that's also okay. Because in this moment, when you allow yourself to feel that, then you're in touch with something in yourself for which it is okay to feel it as it is. And that is the source of metta, of kindness. That is awareness itself. I mean, that's, it's awareness that is aware of what you're feeling right now. So notice that it's not just some sterile, abstract capacity to know, all right, yes, yeah, I'm going again. This awareness that we have of our experience is a feeling space. It can recognize, notice what we are thinking or what we are perceiving, and it feels what we are feeling. And as long as we can actually stay, or to the extent we can stay just with that awareness, which is, let's say, another word for our mind, our heart, citta in Pali, to that extent, we are practicing kindness, we're practicing acceptance. We're stepping out of our conditioned kind of habits and our reactivity. That's ultimately, again, like also with kindness, love, loving kindness, it's the beginning and it's also the end of that. Because in the end, that loving kindness, what it is that capacity of the heart to just receive anything, accept anything, and not retaliate, not be negative about it. This internal space. Because if you stay in this internal space, then you're not reactive, then the heart is free. And then the heart responds to what is happening in an unencumbered, natural way, which happens to be with kindness. What else is there to do? Why be unkind? It only comes to our mind to be unkind if you have got some internal obstructions. If you don't have any obstructions, it's the logic of the heart, is kindness. It's just its basic function. Mm.